consider how much your life depends on the efforts and actions of other living beings who grow our food and transport it, often cook it for us, who make the buildings we live in, the clothes we wear, the medicines we use to heal ourselves. And really let the mind rest in that awareness of how much we depend on others, that we're not some independent, self-sufficient person who can run our own lives independent of the rest of the world. But we're very deeply embedded in the entirety of sentient life. And we receive so much benefit from other living beings. And with a sense of gratitude, let's wish to repay their kindness, and know that the best way to repay kindness is to be able to lead them on the path to awakening. But in order to do that, we have to have the qualities of the holy beings. So we need to exert effort on the path, purify our mind, develop our good qualities. But all for the purpose of being of great benefit to living beings. So make that your motivation for everything you do today, and especially for being here at the teachings. Okay. So it's important to understand properly what our relationship with other living beings is, and what it means to be grateful to them and to want to repay their kindness. And it's important to understand this properly, because if we misunderstand it, then we get all tangled up with our afflictions. Okay? So here, when we're thinking about the kindness of others, it's not just the people we know who are kind to us because they like us. It's the fact that we live, you know, in a relationship with all other living beings, and that we can't survive alone, especially in this day and age where more than any other time in human history, we're dependent on others for everything we have. You know, I think we're more dependent now than centuries ago. And so realizing that, to have a sense of gratitude towards others for what they do. Now, we may say, oh, but they don't do it especially for me. The electrician didn't put these lights in just for me, so they weren't really kind to me. It doesn't matter, yeah, when we're evaluating, when we're thinking of others' kindness to us. The issue of them doing it especially for us is not important at all. The issue is that if they didn't do whatever their work was in society, we would suffer. And so just the fact that they're doing their work, even they aren't doing it for us, me, even they're doing it to make a living for their family, that's okay. Yeah? Because the basic thing is that we benefit from it. Yeah? And that we can't survive alone. So that brings up a feeling of wanting to give back, of wanting to repay the kindness. Now, repaying the kindness, we often think in regular society that repaying the kindness means we do what other people want us to do. Okay? That we're obligated to do things for them that will please them. That is not the meaning of repaying the kindness in Buddhism. Okay? So we're not doing things to please other people so that they will like us. Because that basically is a self-centered motivation. We're doing things that help others because we're concerned about their long-term happiness. Now, doing what is helpful to others is not the same thing as doing what pleases them. Because sometimes what pleases different beings is not good for them, or not good for us, or not good for the rest of the world. Okay? So, you know, an example is, trying to please a relative who has a substance abuse problem. And they want you to finance their drugs or their alcohol. And if you think repaying their kindness means that you give them the money to do that because that makes them happy, then you're being really dumb. Okay? Because that's certainly not working for their long-term happiness. That's enabling them to do something that is harming themselves as well as others. Okay? So sometimes doing what is helpful to someone means doing what doesn't please them in that very moment. Okay? When you have a toothache because you have a cavity or an infected tooth, yeah, if you go to the dentist, is the dentist going to try and please you and give you a lollipop? You know? No, the dentist is going to help you. And the way he or she helps you is going to be temporarily uncomfortable. But in the end, you're going to be happier. Okay? So it is when we try and repay the kindness of others, we have to think of what is best in the long term. So, you know, for example, my family wanted me to be married, have 2.5 children. That's what's normal, you know. I'm not sure about the other 0.5, what happened to that kid. You know. Yeah, but to have my 2.5 kids, you know, have a job, excel in my job, make a lot of money, yeah, go on vacations with the family, and they had a whole life set out for me of what they wanted and what they thought I should have in order to be happy. So they meant well, but they got a daughter like me. Yeah. When you have a kid, it's total potluck. You don't know what you're getting. You know? And Yeah, my dad wanted a daughter who was going to play tennis. My mom wanted a daughter who liked to go shopping. I don't like to do either. Okay. I had a spiritual interest. My parents think I'm, you know, somewhat crazy. So do I do what my parents want and give up my spiritual interest and give up what I consider to be a precious opportunity to make my life meaningful by practicing the Buddha's teachings? Do I give that up in order to please my parents and to be normal? What do I do? So you see, you know, I could please them and make them happy in this life, although probably I'd never make them totally happy. I probably would have created a big mess in my life and in other people's lives and caused other people pain. And with the karma I created over helping my friends and harming my enemies, I probably would have wound up with a lower rebirth in the next lifetime, which lacks any ability to help myself, let alone help others. Or I could do what I did, and that is what enables me to be here with you right now. Yeah. If I had stayed there and had a husband and have kids, there's no way I would be able to travel and teach the Dharma in Germany. Yeah, my husband would want me home, my kids would want me home so that they could go out, but they want me at home. Yeah, and so then I get involved in trying to please them, and you know, then there's no retreat here at Sankeiling, and there's no, you know, all the other things that are happening. Okay? So what does repaying the kindness of sentient beings mean? You know, it doesn't mean just trying to please a few people in this life. It means having a big picture and thinking, you know, how can I do the best to, you know, lead sentient beings on the path to awakening and to help them in this lifetime. Okay? And so in that way, to repay the kindness. Because the thing with trying to please other sentient beings is that it's impossible. If you think attaining Buddhahood is difficult, pleasing other sentient beings is more difficult. Yeah? Because sentient beings are sentient beings. That means they have ignorance, anger, and attachment. That means that their minds are not stable. Yeah? That means that you do one thing to please them, and the next day they want something else. That's the opposite. All we have to do is look at our own minds to see what sentient beings' minds are like. Are you ever pleased by anybody else? Is there anybody else among the over 7 billion human beings on this planet who consistently pleases you and does what is pleasing to you? Anybody? All the people you love, all the people you trust, all the people you're close to, is there anybody that you are 100% satisfied with their behavior because every action they do pleases you? Anybody here? I don't think so. So if our minds can't be pleased by anybody, why do we think we're going to be able to please anybody else? Okay? So what I'm saying is, rather than go around trying to be people pleasers, which we confuse with the Buddhist notion of repaying kindness, rather than doing that, why don't we start being more responsible for our own actions so that we stop harming others and we actually learn how to benefit them? Okay? In English, we have this expression, people pleaser. Yeah. Do you have it in German? Yeah. It was a big thing a while ago that, you know, kind of in addition to Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, then, you know. So people pleaser, is somebody who's running around trying to make everybody else happy. Okay? So this role usually falls to women, but men can be people pleasers too. We're gender indiscriminate here. Okay? But we run around, oh, so-and-so's unhappy, I better fix it. And that person's unhappy, I better please them. And this person wants me to do this, I've got to do this. And so our whole life is, I've got to do this, I have to do that, I must do this. This person's depending on me. Okay, do you hear that all the time from your friends? Yeah, I have to make dinner, I have to pick up my son from the soccer game, I have to pick up my daughter from the volleyball game, I have to, you know, we have something at my workplace that's got to be done. And then I have to go to the Dharma Center and do this. And I have to do that and have to do this. And we're running around like chickens without our heads. Yeah, you ever seen a chicken that's, you know, that they killed that still runs around? So that's what we're like. Trying to make everybody happy. Yeah. And in the process of doing so, sometimes we encourage other people's bad habits. Okay? So you want your children to be happy. Yeah. You don't want to make them upset. So they leave their clothes all over the floor. Yeah. And you go pick them up and launder them and fold them and put them back. Even though your kids are teenagers and can very well do it themselves. But out of kindness and love for your children, you're making it so that they're going to have problems with their future roommates and future spouses because they don't know how to clean up after themselves. Okay? So, you know, pleasing people is different than really helping them. So we have to really think about that. No? And when we appreciate somebody's kindness to us, you know, how do we express that in a way that's going to benefit them? Yeah. When a friend of ours, you know, we have one friend who weighs, 150 kg, and another friend who has diabetes. And they're both very kind to us, so we buy them each a box of chocolate to show our appreciation. Is that kindness? Yeah? Is that kind to buy them a box of chocolate, the one who has diabetes and the other one who weighs 150 kg? Yeah, that's not kindness. That's not the way to repay their kindness. Okay? So instead, think of what really benefits them. You know, and what you can really do to help them. And giving a gift is fine, but give a gift that's appropriate. That's not going to tempt them to do something that is unhealthy. Okay? So we all have this internal wish, you know, to be of service to others. And we all have compassion at some level in us. And we all have kindness. And these are qualities that we need to develop and keep them so that they're coupled together with wisdom. Okay? So they're not Mickey Mouse, it's not Mickey Mouse compassion. Yeah. Years ago, we did a skit at the Dharma Center I was in France. And we had Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva. Okay? So Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva, you know Mickey Mouse. Yeah. Yeah. Does he speak German too? Do they have German speaking Mickey Mouse?
They have the English ones. Very good translator. Yeah. No, really, there's a museum for her. She's very good.
Okay. So, you know, we have Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva, who is the office manager of the Dharma Center. Yeah. So somebody comes in and they're starving, so Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva opens the drawer with the money in it that belongs to the Dharma Center and gives it to this one person, who then goes off and has a big party with all of their friends. Yeah. And then the Dharma Center is completely broke and can't have any courses. Okay? So, you know, Mickey Mouse Bodhisattva meant well, but lacked wisdom. Yeah. He had the compassion, but not the wisdom to go with the compassion. So it's something to really think about and to put into practice. Okay. And sometimes, you know, like in your workplace or your family, sometimes there's a big hullabaloo. I don't know how you say that in German. But there's a big mess. Okay. And everybody's upset about something. You know how it gets, you know? Some group of people, and this one's upset, and that one's upset, and this one, and they're fighting, and they're quarreling, and that, and and then you think, I'm going to get them all settled down. Yeah. And we become, you know, Bodhisattva, the savior. Yeah. I'm going to save my workplace. I'm going to save my family. Yeah. I alone can solve this mess because I am so compassionate. Yeah. So a little bit overflated, you know. Self-inflated. Okay. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, when there's a big mess in the group, in a group of people, the best thing we can do is to keep our mouth closed. Yeah. Sometimes the best thing to do is to talk to select individuals and to find out what they're feeling and what they're needing. Other times, best thing to do. And somebody comes to you and they want to tell you, do you know what so-and-so said to me? Do you know what this one said to me? I can't believe, oh, you should hear. And you say, I don't want to hear. and think, but it's so juicy. Yeah, it's the latest thing that this dimwit did. I don't want to hear. Yeah, it hurts me to hear other people in this group criticize each other. I feel uncomfortable to listen to that. So please, yeah, if you want to talk to me, don't talk to me about the faults of other people. Sometimes that's the best way to handle the situation. Yeah. Other times, like I said, the best way is to talk to people and find out and help. So you have to assess the situation. Yeah. But yeah, this is why wisdom is really important in our practice. And we will make mistakes, guaranteed. Okay. But the fact that you make mistakes, that you're going to make mistakes because you don't have perfect wisdom and perfect compassion, does that mean that you shouldn't try? No. Because the only way we're going to learn is by trying. Yeah. We try, we fall down, we pick ourselves up. That's how we all learn to walk. Okay. I have a scar. I think, where is it? This side. Yeah. So I have a scar here. And I got it when I was a little baby, learning to walk. My parents had an ashtray on the table. Neither of them smoked, but they had an ashtray for guests. And I was learning to walk, and I fell down, and I cut myself. And I still have a scar 60-something years later. Now, does that mean because I fell down when I was learning to walk and hurt myself that I should just say, well, walking is useless, I can't do it? Yeah, I'm afraid of getting hurt again. I'm afraid of, you know, making a mess. I'll do it wrong. So I think I'll just crawl the rest of my life. Okay, so you know, that's how long, you know, if you see me crawling. Okay, so no, you know, we all fell down when we were learning to walk. We all got hurt as kids doing something or another. And we all got up and went on with our lives and learned what we could from our mistake. So that's what we have to keep doing as adults. Yeah. It somehow seems as adults we're less willing to make mistakes. You know, we're much more attached to our image and wanting people to think well of us and looking good. And so we don't want to risk making a mistake. But then we lose out on a lot of things. And we don't learn a lot of things. Okay. Any questions about that?
In German, it could be, she said, Helfer-Syndrom.
Helfer-Syndrom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's that mean?
Helping Helfer-Syndrom. I don't know. Syndrom in English.
Syndrome. Might be the translation for people know. Pleaser.
It's like symptom.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's like symptom, but lot of symptoms together. Mm-hmm. Lot of symptoms together. This is a syndrome. Mm-hmm. And a helper only wants to help others.
Yes. I am so special. I am going to help them all. And then they'll all appreciate me. Right.
Hello. But when I feel like, oh, maybe that is a mistake, I shouldn't do that. Should I do it either?
You have to look at each situation separately. Yeah, and do the best you can.
So maybe I think that may be a mistake, but I can do it because I think I feel it in my heart or something.
Yeah, like I said, you have to just assess it the best you can and realize that often there's not one right way. Yeah, so you try that and you see what happens. If you see it's bringing more problems, then you reassess the situation. Okay? But each situation is going to be different, okay? So if you're thinking about a specific thing, my advice is given in general. It doesn't necessarily pertain to your specific thing, okay? Okay, so yesterday we were at the mind is devoid of mind, for the nature of mind is clear light, okay? So we understood that the mind is devoid of anything that we can pinpoint, any independent essence that we can pinpoint and say that's the mind. And then saying that the mind is clear light means that the mind is empty of independent or inherent existence. Now, when we say that something is empty of inherent or true existence, that doesn't mean it's non-existent. What it means is it's empty of a certain false way of existence. Okay? And the thing that's so challenging is to figure out exactly what that false way of existence is that we think exists, but doesn't exist. Okay, so I just wanted to round that up. Then I wanted to go on. Later in the chapter, His Holiness talks about dependent arising and emptiness. Okay, and so this is a very important topic because, like I just said, things may be empty of independent or inherent existence, but they do exist. How do they exist? Dependent. So they depend on other things. There's nothing that is some kind of absolute truth that is out there, immutable, independent of everything else. Okay. Now you might say, well, what about emptiness? Isn't emptiness the ultimate nature of things? Isn't it the ultimate reality? Isn't that an absolute truth? No. Because emptiness doesn't exist independent of anything else. Okay? Emptiness is, when we talk of emptiness, it has to be the emptiness of something. It's not just emptiness. The emptiness of the self, the emptiness of the table, the emptiness of, you know, whatever object we're talking about. Yeah. It isn't, so emptiness depends on the conventionally existent objects that it is the ultimate nature of. Okay, so we can't have the ultimate nature without having the conventional. Yeah, we can't have ultimate truth without having conventional truth. They depend on each other. So then, His Holiness goes into more depth just about what dependence means and the different kinds of dependence. So I thought I would read a little bit. Okay. So as you can see from what we talked about yesterday, this whole topic of dependence, especially dependence on causes and conditions, it comes a lot, again and again and again and again, okay? So the Madhyamaka tenet system, you know, in Buddhism we talk about different philosophical systems. So the one that is considered the most accurate is called the Madhyamaka. So according to that one, as explained, by the Indian sage Nagarjuna, who lived in the 2nd century. That system speaks of three levels of dependent arising. So there's different ways of talking about these three levels, okay? So if what I say doesn't match with what you heard before, it's okay, because there's different ways of talking about it. Okay, so the first level of dependent arising is common to all the Buddhist tenet systems, and that is causal dependence. In other words, effects depend on causes. Okay? So, the table depends on the wood and the nails and the person who constructed it. The flowers depend on the seeds, the fertilizer in the soil, the warmth, the sunshine, and so on. Okay? So there's a principal cause, which is actually transforms into that thing. That's called the substantial cause. And then there's other helpful conditions that need to be present. Just having the substantial cause alone doesn't mean that we're going to have the result. You can have the wood and the nails and everything there, but if you're missing the person who builds it, yeah. So you have the substantial cause of the table there, but the condition, which is the person who builds the table, is missing, then you don't have the table. Or you have the seeds in the ground, but it's winter time. So you're missing the heat that is and warmth that's necessary for the seeds to sprout. Yeah? So you have the seed, the substantial cause, but you're missing the cooperative conditions like the warmth and springtime and summertime heat. Okay? So a table depends on the wood, which is a substantial cause that, in other words, what actually turns into the table, and the people who make it, who are the cooperative condition that helps to bring about the result. Similarly, our body, mind, and present rebirth depend on their respective causes and conditions. Okay? So, our body isn't just there, it depends. Yeah, depends on the sperm and egg of our parents. And it depends on all the food we ate. Okay? So it's not like this body is some independent entity. Yeah, it arose due to causes and conditions. And anything that arises due to causes and conditions is going to, become a result, producing something else itself in the future. Okay? So such dependency rules out the possibility of things arising haphazardly without any cause. It also, so this brings up the idea of magic. Okay? We talk about magic. What I think magic is we don't know the causes and conditions for something. So we call it magic. But everything that happens must have causes and conditions. Yeah. But if somebody gets cured from a disease, we say it's a miracle. Like there were no causes and conditions for it to happen. There were causes and conditions, but we don't know what they are, so we say it's a miracle. Okay? Okay, so such dependency rules out the possibility of things arising haphazardly without any cause. It also precludes things arising due to discordant causes. So discordant causes are things that don't have the ability to produce that result. So it isn't just a thing of, I want to have a table, so I need causes. I need the causes that have the ability to become the table. Okay? So if I want a table, I need wood and nails and a carpenter. Yeah. I don't, what I don't need, if I say I want a table and you bring me a glass of water, that's a discordant cause. Yeah, because no way is that going to turn into a table. Okay, so barley cannot grow from rice seeds, and happiness does not come from destructive actions. Okay, so not only do we talk about cause and effect on a physical level and concordant causes being needed, but also when we talk about karma, yeah, what we're born as, what we experience, what our habitual mental states are, even the environment that we're born into, all these things are influenced by our past actions. They don't happen by accident. But it isn't just any old past actions that are going to produce, for example, our present rebirth. Okay? So we happen to have a very fortunate rebirth, first because we're human beings, but we're not also just the run-of-the-mill human rebirth, is we have a human rebirth with the ability to meet the Dharma teachings, to understand them, to put them into practice. It's a very special and rare kind of rebirth. Okay? So that required us to have created a lot of virtuous causes in previous lives to have the opportunity we have now. Okay? So it isn't just by accident that we're here, randomly. And it isn't due to the determination of some kind of external creator, because that would be a discordant cause, but it is due to our own actions. And because we have good results, it indicates that the causes we created were virtuous causes. When we have suffering, that indicates that the causes for that misery were certain non-virtuous actions that we did in the past. Okay. And so the Buddha did not set up this system. The Buddha did not say, do virtue and then you get happiness. Do non-virtue, then you get punished and you're miserable. The Buddha did not create the system. He only described it. The Buddha does not dish out rewards and punishment because he's not the cause of our happiness or unhappiness. Our own actions created those causes. Okay? So, you know, and that's how things were discriminated as virtuous and non-virtuous, was in terms of the results they brought. So when the Buddha was able, with his powers, to see sentient beings being happy and trace back their causes to specific actions, those actions, he said, are virtuous.
Oh, he saw it?
Yeah.
The people.
Yeah, okay. He didn't make the whole thing up. When he saw people experiencing suffering, yeah, through his abilities to know things that we can't know at our present level, then he saw what causes they committed, what they engaged in, that brought suffering, and he called those causes non-virtuous. So even calling things virtuous and non-virtuous is dependent. Nothing is inherently good or bad. Something becomes virtuous or non-virtuous because of the result it produces. Okay? So if swearing at people and throwing things at them and screaming them and falsely accusing them of things they didn't do, if that brought about happiness, then they would be called, it would be called virtue. But those actions, when we do, don't bring about happiness, they bring about suffering. So they're called non-virtuous. Okay, so this kind of dependence. In addition to chemical, biological, and physical causality, karma and its effects is another system of causal dependence. Karma is intentional action or volitional action, and there are actions that are done verbally, physically, and mentally. And these causes, these actions we do, bring effects. The rebirths we take are experiences in our lives and the environment in which we are born, and our habitual tendencies as well. Okay, so causal dependence, that's the first kind of dependent arising. Okay, the second kind of dependency is called dependent designation, and it has two branches to it. Okay, so here the two branches are mutual dependence and mere designation by term and concept. So we have two big categories, causal dependence and dependent designation. If we subdivide dependent designation, we have mutual dependence, mutual dependence, and mere dependence by term and concept. Okay. So mutual dependence refers to things in relationship to each other, long and short, parent and child, whole and parts, and agent, object, and action. Okay, so our body, which is a whole, we see the body as a whole thing, okay, depends on its parts, the arms, the legs, the head, the intestines, the kidneys, and everything else. Okay, the table also depends on its parts. So the table and its parts exist in relationship to each other. Okay, so we often use the example of a car. Yeah, so a car depends on its parts. So we have a car and we have car parts. Okay, you can't have a car without having car parts. And car parts cannot be car parts unless you have a car. Okay. Now that doesn't mean that the car parts are only car parts when they are in a car at a specific time. Because we all know that you can go to a car part store. Yeah. And get tires and get an axle and, you know, get a new windshield and so on, and have that installed on in your car. But before they're installed in your car, they're still called car parts. Okay, because they have that potential to be part of a car. And car parts and car are established in relationship to each other. Okay, so we need to have car parts that aren't in a car at a particular time, that can be replacement parts. Otherwise, we're going to have trouble. So when you need, you know, a new pistons in your car, you go to a car part store. You don't go to a pharmacy. Okay? Because, you know, antibiotics and cars are, they're not mutually dependent on each other. Okay? Yeah. And vitamins and cars, you know, when you need new pistons, you can't put vitamins in there. Okay? Similarly, when you need vitamins, you don't go and get a new piston. Otherwise, you're going to get pretty sick. Okay, so, yeah. So the whole and the parts exist in relationship to each other. Yeah. Now, we are all children of our parents, aren't we? So we are children because they are parents. Without there being children, you can't have parents. Without there being somebody being parents, you can't have children. Okay? So you might say, okay, well, let's go back to the seeds and the sprouts, you know, our gardening class. Yeah. You do a lot of gardening in Madhyamaka philosophy. You're always talking about seeds and sprouts. Okay, so the seed is the substantial cause for the sprout. And you have to have a seed. If you want to have daisies, you need daisy seeds. That's the concordant cause. If you plant chili pepper seeds, you're not going to get daisies. Okay? So beware of what you plant. So we say the daisy is dependent on the daisy seeds because the effect is dependent on the cause. And that's how we talk when we talk about causal dependence. But when we talk about mutual dependence, then we say the cause also depends on the result. So it's not just the result depending on the cause in mutual dependence, but it's the cause depending on the result. And that means that the seed cannot be considered a cause unless it has the potential to produce a result. Okay? So the seed being a cause depends on the potential for the result. Yeah. So in mutual dependence, the cause and the result depend on each other. They're posited in dependence on each other. Because to be a cause, you have to have the potential for the result. To be a result, you have to have had a cause. Yeah. They depend on each other. Okay? So that's mutual dependence. And when you think about that a lot, you know, when you think about who you think you are, when you think about your various identities in society, they're all posited in relationship to other people or to societal structures. Okay? So, you know, I happen to have the label American. Yeah. USDA. you know, I have that label. Why? You know, what makes me an American? There is nothing inside this body that is American. Okay? Genealogically, all my ancestors came from Eastern Europe, Western Russia, that whole area. Okay? There's nothing American genealogically. In my mind, there is nothing American. Yeah? Because American isn't a state of mind, you know? So why am I called America? Because I was born in a city on a piece of dirt, you know, in a hospital, on a piece of dirt that was called United States of America. And because I was born on that piece of dirt, they gave me a piece of paper that says I'm American. And that piece of paper enables me to travel to other pieces of dirt. Okay, and that is the only way in which I am American. Okay, but I'm American independent upon that dirt, and all those people who agree that you could call that piece of dirt America. Okay, and America depends, it doesn't depend on me alone, although if I were president, you know, America depends not just on the dirt, but on all the people. Because if there were just dirt, but no people on this planet, America would not exist. Okay? So, you know, whatever nationality we are, it depends on whatever dirt we were born on top of. Yeah? Or sometimes it depends on whatever dirt our parents were born on top of. And when you think about it this way, nationalism seems very stupid, doesn't it? Yeah? Nationalism, my country, right or wrong. It's like it becomes really stupid when we look at what it's based on. Yeah? So I don't know if, you know, somebody took some, like we were talking yesterday, some dirt from Germany into the U.S. and you got it past U.S. immigration, you know, because they don't like dirt from other countries. You know, or you got some American dirt and brought it to Germany. Yeah. Does that mean then that the two countries are going to get along because they share dirt? I don't know. That's beyond me. Okay? But what I'm getting at is you can see that all our different identities in life depend on someone else's identity. Okay? So we posit men and women and intersex and all the other things that I don't can't remember all the names for, so please forgive me. We posit all of these in relationship to each other. Yeah? If you didn't have men, you wouldn't have women. If you didn't have women, you wouldn't have men. If you didn't have a binary system, you wouldn't have people outside of the binary system. Okay? You wouldn't have other choices. So all these things are posited in dependence upon each other. They don't have their own inherent identity. Okay? So that's mutual dependence. Okay. Oh, also in mutual dependence, they talk about agent, object, and action. So this is important too. So the agent is the person who does an action, and the object is what was acted upon. Okay? So somebody becomes a baseball player, or I'm sorry, a soccer player. You guys like soccer more than baseball, don't you? Yeah. So somebody becomes a soccer player because there's a soccer ball. And because there's, what do you call them? Goals? Yeah? Goalie is the guy who defends the goal, right? So you have the goals, and you have the field.
Tor.
So,
huh? Yeah, Tor in German.
Yeah. So, I don't, that's German.
Isn't
that
one?
Yeah, no. You keep talking German to me.
I know.
You forget that you once lived in the U.S. yeah, everywhere, you know, now it, when I see her in German, she's always talking to me in German. and I go, oh, back. So, you know, we have the soccer players who exist in relationship to each other. The two teams exist in relationship to each other. Somebody is a soccer player because there is a ball and, you know, a team. You have a soccer ball because you have a soccer player and you have a soccer field. You have a soccer field because you have a soccer ball and a soccer player. Those things exist dependent on each other. Okay? So when we look and you know, especially when we get stuck in our identities, you know, I am a this, therefore people should treat me like that, or I am a this, therefore I should act like that, then to realize that all these things come about in relationship to other things. They don't have some kind of inherent nature. That becomes very helpful. Okay, so that's dependent, mutual dependence. Okay, so the hard spherical object, the size of a small apple, becomes a baseball only because there is the game of baseball, a pitcher, a batter, and a bat. Apart from this context, this round object would neither be called a baseball nor function as a baseball. Okay? A parent is identified only in relationship to a child, and someone becomes a child only in relationship to a parent. So when you go back for Christmas dinner and you watch yourself become a child again in your parents' home, remember, you don't have to act like a six-year-old child again. You can be an adult child. And your parents need to remember that you are an adult child and not a six-year-old. Okay. A parent is identified only in relation to a child, and someone becomes a child only in relationship to a parent. Neither the parent nor the child exist independently of each other. On a daily basis, we use conventions and terms and engage in actions based on language. Doing this does not require there to be a direct one-to-one objective reference for each term. Rather, terms are defined relationally and derive meaning only in the context of mutually dependent relations. Okay? So, in the context of a Buddhist course, this becomes a gong. Because we keep it here and we hit it to indicate, you know, the beginning or end of something. Yeah. In this context, it becomes a gong. Now, if I didn't have a plate to eat on, and I left my alms bowl at the abbey, this could become my bowl. And I could go through the line and receive food in this, and this would be a bowl. And people wouldn't bother about calling it a bowl, unless they first saw it here. And then they said, oh, it's an inherently existing gong, you can't use it as a bowl. But if they didn't see it here first, they would think, oh, she has a brass bowl. Okay. If I wanted to open my door to get fresh air in my room, and I needed to keep the door open, I could put this there and it would be a doorstop. And it would function as a doorstop. And if it was there long enough and all my friends saw it there, when I said, you know, bring me my doorstop, they would know exactly what I was talking about. Because in that situation, it would be posited and perform the function of a doorstop. If this had an inherent nature, it couldn't be a gong, a bowl, and a doorstop. It could only be one of those. Because inherent existence means that it's independent of other factors. So it couldn't be called another thing or function as another thing, depending on another situation, because inherent existence doesn't allow for that. Okay? But because it exists dependently, then it can become different things depending on the situation. Yeah.
My question would be, does that also apply for actions? So I mean, am I only compassion if someone somehow takes this or recognizes this? Or?
Okay. So are you only compassionate if somebody else thinks you're compassionate?
Yeah, or at least receives it or...
No, the thing that makes you compassionate is your own motivation. So your being compassionate depends on your motivation. Okay. But if you're going to be a giver, a generous person, then that is going to depend on there being somebody who accepts your gift. Okay? But even if somebody doesn't accept your gift, you can be considered a generous person because you had a gift and you had the motivation to give. Okay? But being a giver or being generous has to depend on some other factors. Yeah. Otherwise, we could call anything generous. Okay, we need to stop. Okay, so this is actually a good place to stop, and we'll do dependent designation in the afternoon, or mere designation in terms of dependent on terms and concept. I'll do the third kind of dependent arising later.